and welcome back to 10 out of 10 We'd Watch Again with Lauren and Ross.
Hello.
As it's Valentine's Day this weekend, we thought we'd hit you with a wee romantic comedy. And we were kind of humming and hawing about what ones to do because all the ones that I love, Ross was like, absolutely fucking not. And really, there's only so much that you'll watch with me, you know?
Yep.
I nearly suggested Gone Girl, and that was definitely an off you fuck from Ross.
I've seen it too many times now.
We consulted with the big man, the high hegemon of romantic comedies, our gal Ainsley, and when she said Notting Hill, we were like, ah. And we did that thing of like, oh my God, we've not seen Notting Hill for ages, but like, what a good movie. And I think you'll find as the podcast goes on that we were like, oh yeah. And then as the film went on, we were like, it's all right.
Might be a reason we don't watch it all the time.
Yeah. But we've still done it as this week's because for a lot of people it is a 10 out of 10. So sorry, guys. Anyway, Ross, take it away.
Right. So it's released in May 1999, directed by Roger Mitchell, written by Richard Curtis, starring Julia Roberts, Hugh Grant, Hugh Bonneville, Emma Chambers, James Dreyfuss, Reese Evans, Tim McKinnon, say that three times, Gina McKee, and a budget of $42 million and a box office of $364 million.
40 out of 10, 40 out of 10. Also, if yous are hearing purring and banging around, the cats cannot be shunned from the room, so they're clearly right into Notting Hill. Like,
oh aye, they love it.
This was a 10 out of 10 we'd watch again for the cats, so just in case. So general overview of the movie. A lowly bookkeeper who happens to live in Notting Hill falls in love with one of Hollywood's greatest stars. And basically, we see how their story goes. I do have thoughts and opinions about the lowly bookkeeper trope, but we'll get to that in about 5 minutes. I'm scared to ask, why do you love this film? Do you love this film? Is this just a, we had to pick a romantic comedy, so we ran with it?
I mean, it should be more directed at yours. Why do you like this movie?
Okay, so I do like this movie, but I think this kind of rom-com is my favourite. But, like, see the Richard Curtis, British, the kind of bumbling awkwardness.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it just, these are my favourite kinds. Like, as much as, like, there's a place in my heart for many, do you know what I mean? I like the period romances. I like the early 2000s ones. I love your classic late 80s, early 90s ones, but the Richard Curtis ones especially, it's that right British humour. And when I say British, I really do mean English because...
Oh, it's just middle-class English.
Do you know what I mean? But there's something really charming about it. And with these movies, like, not a lot happens, but, like, that's kind of the point that not a lot happens. Do you know what I mean? It's just them getting on with things and there's always, like, a group of pals that are all just as funny. Like, there's always, like, a mild... like, dramatic moment that's not really that dramatic because you know they're going to get together in the end.
Yeah, you know it tends to work out in the end.
Exactly. And then there's always the moment of, like, the line from the film or the monologue from a film, like, Four Winds for a Funeral when they're standing in the rain and she's like, I didn't even notice it was raining. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, but there's always, like, a really good moment like that in Richard Curtis movies. So, as much, like, I do love Notting Hill, but... it's not my favourite one, like, will happily sit and watch this movie. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's Richard Curtis. What can go wrong?
I would agree with everything you've said there. I mean, Richard Curtis does have a... like, you can tell when it's a Richard Curtis written movie.
Totally.
That's Love Actually. Like, that's just your... I mean, they kind of both follow the same style, if you will.
Yeah. And I think that's why, and correct me if I'm wrong because I do realise I'm speaking for you, is I think that's why you don't mind these ones because there is the kind of there's more comedy in them rather than, like, I think a lot of the American ones are just kind of cringy, do you know what I mean? Whereas the British ones, there is that kind of daft humour to them.
Yeah, I think the American ones are, like, too over the top sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, they have their place, but, you know, like, I love a Meg Ryan rom-com as much as the next girl, do you know what I mean? But sometimes it's like, hey, calm down.
It's just such a far-fetched thing with American ones. And, I mean, it is just stupid.
Yeah.
To the point of, like, it's so unrealistic.
Yeah.
I mean, this one is very unrealistic, like, let's be honest, but...
there's a touch of the realism in the British ones, though, do you know what I mean? And I don't know if it's just that, like, you know someone kind of like this, or you've been to a place that kind of looks like this, or something. Yeah. But there is a kind of groundedness. Is that a word?
Yeah, they're more grounded in realism than the American ones anyway.
Yes, that's what I was trying to say. You're so much more eloquent than me. Right, we'll dive into thoughts and opinions. Before we dive into like the normal plot of the movie, I just want like 5 minutes to talk about the cast. Obviously, this kind of got everybody at like the height of their powers. Like, I would say Hugh Grant's prime is like late 90s to early 2000s. Do you know what I mean?
I would agree with that, aye.
And like, obviously, Julia Roberts has never been more like of the moment as in the 90s. Do you know what I mean? Hugh Grant, I know a lot of people kind of love or hate him, but I just think he's so charming, do you know what I mean? Like, I know he's a pure bumbling dick, but, like, he's just, there's a lovely wee charm to him, and, like, he's done, he's had quite the, he's, I say quite the career, that's a fucking understatement, do you know what I mean?
But, no, it's been massive,
No, totally, like, obviously started off in your period dramas, your Shakespearean numbers. I think it was Emma he was in, or Persuasion, I can't remember,
one of them.
And then, obviously, kind of, the thing that everyone takes the piss out of Hugh Grant for is that, like, bumbling idiot kind of thing in Four Weddings, this, About a Boy, Bridget Jones, although Bridget Jones is a bit skeezier in, obviously Love Actually. And now, I really love what Hugh Grant's doing now. Like, he's in his real, like, fuck it era, do you know what I mean?
No, he does not care anymore.
Nah, like, he's... The Gentleman, I think, was the first time where it was like, what the fuck is Hugh Grant doing? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, he was unrecognisable in that.
Totally, totally. And then obviously he was in Glass Onion.
Yeah.
He's the Oompa Loompa and Wonka. And then the last one was that Heretic.
Oh, he's fantastic in Heretic.
I thought he was so good. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, he's going to be in the new Bridget Jones, but the new Bridget Jones is dead to me because I cannot believe they killed off Mark Darcy. I'm not happy about it.
Yeah, I think he must have been busy.
Big Colin Firth, aye. I seen he was doing some like Lockerbie TV show on ITV and I'm like, you couldn't have said aye to Bridget Jones, my man, no.
Probably didn't want to. Don't blame him.
I think he's been in, to be honest, I've only seen the first one, but I think he's been in all three. I also think, see, as much as this is Julia Roberts, like, in her moment, you know, like, I think her moment was mostly, like, the kind of rise of, like, Pretty Women and all that.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like, Julia Roberts is most recognisable when she's got the huge red curly hair.
Uh-huh.
And whereas in this movie, she's a lot more stripped back, I think. Like, the hair's shorter and it's straight. And as much as this is, like, a romantic comedy, she doesn't really play to the comedy. She's quite serious in this film.
Oh, she plays it pretty straight, aye?
Yeah, yeah. But when she does hit, like, the comedic moments, like, it works. I mean, she's got a lovely laugh. And if my mum is to believe, Julia Roberts is the most beautiful woman in the world, do you know what I mean? Like that's like Julia Roberts and Meg Ryan, that's like my mum's too. Like, these women are great.
Julia Roberts is one I've not really, I mean, I've seen like Julia Roberts movies, but I've never really like paid attention to her career. Like, I've never bothered looking it up or anything.
Yeah, she was mad though, like, not mad, obviously, do what you want, she's fucking Julia Roberts, but there was also, like, behind every movie she did, there was always, like, drama because she was, like, a pure notorious, like, homewrecker, like,
aye.
And I think she was, like, was it Kiefer Sutherland she was engaged to, or she left her man for Kiefer Sutherland or something like that, but basically, like, every relationship she's been in, she's, like, knocked the man off a bird or something like that. But to be fair, like, if Julia Roberts came chatting at the door and was like, Lauren, I'm here to take Ross, I'd be like, absolutely, why didn't, like, I don't know what you'd have to say about that, Ross, but I would happily sell you to Julia Roberts.
I mean, I didn't know that, I felt it still.
And so it was all just like the gossip at the time, do you know what I mean? But I'm sure her and Kiefer Sutherland were linked. Probably should have googled that. But like, I wasn't planning on going any tangent.
No, fair enough. I big Julia Roberts, who knew she had that in her?
Top shagger. I also think like the B cast of this movie, and I say that in the nicest way possible, like all the pals and the family and stuff, they are such British that guys, do you know what I mean? Like, as soon as they all came on, they were like, oh, that's her from Vicar of Dibley. Oh, that's him from Downton Abbey. Oh, that's your man from 101 Dalmatians. Do you know what I mean? Like, obviously, that's where we know them from. Obviously, in the 90s, they were their own thing. But, like, they all are, like, obviously, Reese Iffens as well. Like, We've known him from most British things, but notably like the Spider-Man.
Yeah, he was the Dr. Connors in the Sony Dr. Spider-Man
Connors,
ones.
Dr. Connors, that's who it was. Even the B cast in this, they've all got beautiful chemistry together. They all work really well. I mean, they've probably all been working with each other for years. Do you know what I mean? But it is funny watching this movie now. And it's like what you know them from, do you know what I mean? Whereas obviously before it was just like, oh, there they are, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, the surprising thing is they've all went on to do well in America.
Oh, aye.
Like they're all big in America.
Yeah, and they're all, now they all do like Paddington 4. But like, I'm never going to moan about the Paddington movies, like they're class.
I mean, your man's in Gladiator 2 as well.
Oh my God, so he is. So he is.
That was the first thing I noticed. I assumed, the fuck, that's the man for Gladiator 2.
Big Denzel still in his house.
Aye, legend.
So we'll just dive into the plot and we'll dive in from there. So we meet Will, played by Hugh Grant, who runs a travel bookshop in Notting Hill and lives with Spike, his Welsh lodger, and quite possibly one of the classiest gaffes I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, this is what I love about like these, I say British, English rom-coms, is they all have like shit jobs that don't make money.
Yep.
But they can all, they just cut about London loving it.
100%.
Nah, I don't believe it. It's got the friends problem all at it again, Hunter.
Yeah. Like three of them are always unemployed. Three of them have good jobs and yet they live right beside Central Park. Aye. Yeah. Do you know that's another thing as well, is that I love about British rom-coms is like, the gaffes are always class. Like,
oh, fuck I.
Yeah, like, no, like, there's the thing, I don't know if you'll know, but hopefully some listeners will know, is there's, like, the Nancy Meyer kitchen, like, seeing, like, the holiday and You've Got Mail and all this kind of stuff. It's always, like, the kitchens are huge and lush and fabulous. And I feel like they do that in British rom-coms, but it's always, like, London townhouses. There's always, like, a big comfy sofa. There's always, like, lovely art on the walls, like that kind of thing, do you know what I mean? So he bumps into Anna Scott, played by Julia Roberts, and, I mean, literally bumps into her and spills his orange juice all over. Also, why are you drinking orange juice out of a coffee cup? Like, what's the plan here?
Yeah, so she comes into his travel shop.
Oh, yeah.
He begin with, he goes, oh, I own this travel bookshop. Such a niche,
such a
thing.
90s thing as well.
Oh, aye. Like, you, even then, I don't think you would have a shop dedicated to it, surely.
No. I was in the library at the weekend and there's, like, whole travel sections in the library. Like, why are you buying books of, like, the place you're only going to go to the once, do you know what I mean? Like,
so, she goes in there. It's never really said why, to be honest with you.
She's looking for a book on, well, no, she picks up books on Turkey, but there's nothing really said about if she's going to Turkey or not.
But then he kind of falls for her then, if you will.
Oh, you would, though. You would. Big saucy Julia Roberts. Aye, but she thinks he's all funny because he catches the guy who's from, is it Black Books?
Black Books, yeah.
Yeah. With a book down his trousers and all that. And she's like, tee-hee-hee. But even then, it's like pure straight face and it's like, you should be in jail. Like when she signs an autograph and all that.
Yeah.
Sorry, I skipped a bit. Thanks, Ross. So then after that, he bumps into her and literally like spills orange juice all down her nice white crisp t-shirt. So he invites her over to his gaff to get it all cleaned up. And like, he knows who she is, but he's trying to play it like super cool, which could never be me. Like, see if I spilled juice over like Sebastian Stan or something. You would never see me for dust. Like, I'd just be melted in the corner somewhere. I'm like, I'm so sorry. Like, so, like, they have, like, the kind of usual Hugh Grant-style bumbling exchange of, like, do you want coffee, tea, apricots and honey? Like, shut up, mate. Who's got a jar of apricots and honey in their fridge?
Yeah, that must be Spikes. Like, surely that's got to be Spikes.
Yeah. We're getting into Spike in about 5 minutes because what a guy Spike is. So then they have the kind of wee exchange at the front door. He's like, oh, surreal but nice. And then she goes in for a nip. And he's like, glorious, if I never see you again, I've gave you a wee nip, I'm happy. So then, Big Reese Iffins as Spike is really the high point of the movie for me. Like, I love him so much. He's so funny. Anytime he walks on screen, you're smiling. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, he's the real proper humour in this.
Aye.
And he's so fucking out of pocket.
100%. Even like at the start when he's going on the date and they have to, he's like showing off all these pure inappropriate t-shirts and all that. And then he's always walking about with his arse hanging out. Do you know what I mean? Like he's got like the tiniest, tightest tops and the jeans that barely cover his arse. He's just so funny, man. Like just walking about with like his goggles on it, like scuba goggles on it. Like so fucking funny, man.
Yeah, Reese Evans plays this very well.
Yeah.
Like, he looked like he had fun playing this
role. 100%. Anyway, he doesn't take down the message that Anna's phoned and Will is, like, going after his nan, trying to find her. Like, he knows she puts, like, cartoon characters in her name but can't get through to her. And then finds her at the Ritz and she invites him round for tea.
Yeah, so he thought he was going to meet her, but it turns out to be like a press junket thing.
Yeah. Where he has the kid on, he's part of the Horse and Hound. And he's like, bought her these pure shite flowers. And everyone's like, oh, right, no bother. And he walks in and like the room's covered in these like fabulous like £300 bouquets. And he's like, oh, there's my £2, like yellow roses. It's that bit when he's like kidding on his Horse and Hound and they're like, oh, you can ask her some questions. And he's like, so would your movie have more horses? And she's like, it's kind of difficult seeing as it's in space. It's so daft.
Yeah, it's pretty much just them trying to sneak time together, if you will.
Yeah. They keep being interrupted. Like,
yeah, I think it's her manager. Yeah.
Yeah, and then he ends up having to like go around the other actors and talk about a movie he's like never seen.
Aye, that bit's funny. See when he goes right to the first guy and he's like, "You tell me your favourite part." He's like, "I like space."
Also, like, shout out to the Misha Barton cameo, like our gal from Sixth Sense and the OC.
She's done a lot of stuff.
Yeah, like, I forgot she was in this film. Like, you forget how much she did when she was younger before she even got to the OC. Yeah,
before she became a name in television, if
you
will.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, but mine's when she was in the OC, that was around the time, like, in all the, like, teenage girl magazines where she was, like, going out and getting drunk. And that's terrible. You shouldn't do that.
Having fun.
I know, right? I remember that. There was, like, a magazine when I was younger called Sneak. And it used to always show, like, Charlotte Church wearing knickers out and all this. And it was like,
fuck's sake.
Honestly, it was like, oh, these rebellious girls. And it's like, now looking back, it's like, they were 21. Do you know what I mean? We were all dickheads at 21.
Yeah, give them a break.
Into it. So, and he finally manages to secure the date with Big Anna and they go to his sister's birthday party. Before I go any further, I just kind of want to say, like, and I don't know if this is the right word, but, like, one thing I love about this movie is how, like, quote unquote meta it is. Is that even the right word? Like, obviously Julia Roberts was like one of the biggest stars of the 90s, so obviously she's playing one of the biggest stars in this film. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's very on the nose. No, I'm with you, I get it.
And like, I wonder, like, obviously she's going to have had a lot to draw from, because like, to play this, because she's like, I'm a box office selling actress, like, do you know what I mean? I mean, to be fair, from like the scripts and the posters you see of Anna Scott in this film, I think Julia Roberts makes better movies, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, the little bits you see of her films look shit.
They look really shite. Yeah. Like, even later on when they're doing the lines and it's like she's in some mad submarine thing and it's like, my gal, do you know what I mean? But I wonder if she had like, I was looking it up and I couldn't find anything, but I wonder if she had anything to do with the script. Like, now when it's like, oh, she stays in hotel rooms under like cartoon names or something like that. I wonder if she was like, oh, I do this, or oh, this needs to be done. I'm not saying Hugh Grant wasn't a huge star, but obviously you can buy Hugh Grant as like a middle class book salesman, whereas Julia Roberts is fucking Julia Roberts. Do you know what I mean?
I mean, it'll either be something she does or it's a known thing that, like, set, like, they go under aliases.
Yeah.
But it's like hers, somebody's happens to be cartoon characters. So maybe like a person on the film's worked with somebody that's done it before. Like, I can imagine that being like a wee nod to somebody.
Aye, 100%. Yeah, like there's some celebrity up the road being like, bastard, now I need to find new names.
Yeah, aye.
So anyway, they head to the sister's birthday party and everyone is obviously like pure bedazzled by Anna. I think this is one of the more like comforting parts of the film, like, when they're all just, again, class gaff, another fucking belter, and they're all just chatting shite and like getting along, and it's just lovely. And I think that's where you see that like more grounded realism, and I say realism in italics, do you know what I mean? Of, yeah. Like, but like with a friend group, do you know what I mean? Because you do that. Like if you meet up all your pals and you've not seen them for a while and you just sit and moan about your work and like talk shite and it's like, oh, my stuff's worse than yours. Like, do you know what I mean?
The dinner scene is, it's one of those ones that the character, some of the characters are very over the top, while some of them are very like what you would expect from a dinner scene.
Yeah, his sister, your woman for Vicar of Dibley, yeah. She always plays that type of character. She's always like the frazzled, eccentric, like quirky.
Kind of dotery.
Aye.
Yeah.
Dithery pain in the arse.
Aye. My only issue with this bit is when they go for the last brownie.
Oh, I was going to talk about that. Aye, why are in Ross?
So, like, the whole point of this is, like, whoever has the saddest story gets the brownie.
While they're sitting with our pal, who's just had an accident and is paralysed, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I feel like they go on about it, oh, I don't know my job in it. The woman who's paralysed hits it with, well, I kind of use my legs and we can't have kids. I'm like, where the fuck did that come from this scene?
That would be the point where I'd be like, oh, I really need to go for a snout. Like, I couldn't sit in that pure awkwardness, do you know what I mean? Because it's all very well and good. The rest of them being like, oh, I don't really know my job, or oh, I'm single and I don't like who I live with. And then like this pure tough hang of like, oh no, I had an accident, now I can't have wins. And they have this like teary exchange with each other. And then they go to give the brownie to Hugh Grant just because he's divorced and lives with a flatmate. No. Like, if we're going off serious tragedy, nobody's getting it apart from his pal. Do you know what I mean?
I just don't get, because within that happens to the character, is that it doesn't go anywhere.
No.
Like, it really leads to nothing. Yeah. It's basically a whole setup for this scene.
Yeah, I think, like, if they were to make it now, she'd, like, miraculously fall pregnant by the end of the film. Do you know what I mean? There would be, like, a moment where she's like, oh, you'll never guess. Do you know what I mean?
No, I get you. It's just, watching it yesterday, it kind of threw me.
Yeah.
I was like, nah, that's a bit too much.
Yeah, I do agree with you. And then I also feel like they follow it up with Julia Roberts being like, oh, I've been on a diet for 19 years and one of these days my looks will fade and they'll realise I'm a bad actress. And I'm like, what's more of a bastard? Like, not being stunning anymore or being paralysed and can't have wings. Do you know what I mean? Like, it just, that whole bit, like, is the start of it before the brownie bit is all like, oh, we're all pals, la, la, la. And then as soon as it gets to the brownie bit, it's like, oh, tough hang. Like, yes. I couldn't sit there.
It's a real, like, kick in the groin moment.
On it, yeah. And there's a few of them in this, like, and I think that's why this film, as much as I do like this movie, I wouldn't be like, this is my favourite rom-com ever, because this does have a lot more, like, kick in the gut. Yeah. Like, moments than, like, uplifting moments, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, and they're just kind of inserted, like, randomly.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, that's the funny part about this, it's just, there's no point.
Yeah.
There was no point in having, like, first of all, I don't understand why she had to be, like, disabled.
Yeah.
Because the actress isn't disabled.
Yeah.
The story doesn't lead anywhere about her being disabled, other than 2 points of it.
Yeah.
But it really, if she wasn't disabled, it wouldn't change this film. So I don't get it. I just don't get it.
Yeah, she could just be a pal that can't have kids. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? And that affects thousands of women. Oh, so you could be like, oh, representation. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
I think you could really not relate to it more. That's the wrong word. I mean, you could see it more if it was just the...
Yep.
Or, like, they can't have kids. I'm like, fair enough.
Yep. People could relate to that, though, do you know what I mean?
Oh,
like, that
I
would be something that, like, you could be watching, and it could be one of those things. No, they always talk about it, of, like, oh, if we put this in a film, this will, like, open the doors of conversation. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
that kind
of
vibe. Absolutely.
And they could have actually maybe led to a storyline on with that.
Yeah, 100%. Apparently, the original cut of this movie was 3.5 hours long.
Oh, fuck that.
I know, and then they've cut it down to 2 hours. So I do wonder if parts of the Friends storylines were cut, because there are a lot of bits that, like, kind of stop and start. Like, his sister turns around to Reese Iffins at the end and is like, I'm thinking about getting engaged, and by the way, it's to you. And he's like, what? But like, up until that point, you've not seen those characters like interact.
No, you've not seen them at all.
Like, they've not really been in the same room. Like, as far as up until that point in the film, Hugh Grant kind of gives off the like, fuck my roommate vibes. Do you know what I mean? Like, you never see the roommate with his pals. And then by about halfway through the film, they're all just together. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, at the beginning, you don't see him as a friend of his. They just live together.
Yeah.
Because you know that Spike isn't paying rent to him.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. What is he supposed to be? Like, an artist or something like that? But you never see his art. It's only when the wee sister tells you that's what he does.
Yeah, that's the only way you find out that...
A painter,
but he does nothing to show that at all.
Just cuts about and he scuds all day.
I'm trying to think of something else he actually does in this movie, and there's nothing.
No, you're totally right. He just cuts about being a gem, you know?
Just being an absolute legend.
100%, 100%. So, like, after the world's most awkward, faux tragic moment, Anna and Will obviously leave, and this is where we cue Ross's favourite singer, Ronan Keating.
Fuck off.
Ronan Keating starts belting it out as they break into one of those private gardens and, like, sit on a bench and la la la, as you just hear big Ronan belting out in the background. You love Ronan Keating, Ross. What are you talking shite for?
Don't get me started on Ronan Keating. I've been through this many a time. The guy's shite. Can he sing? And how long ago was it now where I went on that rant and you filmed it?
Oh my God, that was years ago when we sent it to Carol.
Aye.
And it was, I can't remember where we were, but we came home and we were steaming, and there was like some Ronan Keating song came on the telly, and you were like, fucking Ronan Keating, going off your nut, because it was like he's got an album cover where he like stands on a wooden pallet, and you were like, prick.
What's the point?
So then I sent this video to my sister Carol, and then Carol has bought Ross something Ronan Keating related like every year.
For fucking years.
It cracks me up every time. Like, Ronan Keating is a prick, but I've never met anyone who hates Ronan Keating as much as you do.
Do you know the thing is, I don't know why I hate him. I just hate him.
That's like me with Kirsten Dunst. Like, she's never done anything to me, but I would love to just have a square go.
I mean, It would knock my teeth in, that's fine, but just as long as he knows that I hate him, that's enough.
Fair. Ronan, if you're listening, you fuck have off. No fans in this house.
You're not wanted here, piss off.
Although everyone in my work's been talking about that Boys Own documentary that's out there now, and apparently Ronan Keating does come off as a prick. It's Mickey the Bricky that everyone feels bad for.
Oh, that's another thing.
Oh God.
I'm getting out of my theory now.
Right, here we go.
This has got fuck all we do with Notting Hill, fuck all we do with Ronan Keating guy. If you look it up, and I'm pretty sure I'm 100% correct here,
right.
And every boy band does a bricky.
Aye, no, 100%, because I've told many a people your theory, and they've all been like, oh my God.
A fucking bricky. And if you don't know, if you're in a band and you don't know who the bricky is, you're the bricky.
Sorry to tell you. Here, listen, it is a theory that needs to be shared, Ross.
Fucking true.
We need to watch that Boys on documentary because everybody's been fucking talking about it.
Nah, we'll get a swatch.
What?
Fucking brickies, man. Fuck off, Ronan Keating.
So they walk home from the private garden after Ronan Keating has sang You Say It Best.
Say it best.
When you say nothing at all. That was quite good.
Aye, bang on.
So he pops back to Julia Roberts' room in the Ritz. And there is none other than Alec Baldwin standing there, who is supposed to be our current boyfriend, ex-boyfriend. There's not really a lot of explanation.
Yeah, I think from my gathering of it, they're together, but she's kind of out of it.
Yeah.
And then he just comes to a surprise visitor.
Aye.
But he's meant to be like this big superstar. And considering Alec Baldwin these days,
I feel like now, like knowing Alec Baldwin now, whenever he pops up and things, you're like, ooh, jump scare. But Hugh Grant obviously has to pretend that he's room service so that he doesn't start in. And then Alec Baldwin just stuffs a fat wad of cash in his hand. And I'm like, you just got free money for like taking a bin out. Like, shut the fuck up. You're fine.
Yeah, fuck it, aye.
100%. So then And this is where we cue the sad walk. We cue the sad music. That How Do You Mend a Broken Heart song plays in the background as Hugh Grant. I thought I was going to say Hugh Jackman there. Hugh Grant. Fuck, that song would be even worse if Hugh Jackman was in it. As Hugh Grant walks through Notting Hill through the seasons to show us that a year has passed and he's still not been able to get over Julia Roberts. Meanwhile, she's fucked off at premieres, let her movies out and all that, but he just can't get over her, guys. He can't do it. His pals set him up on a string of, like, really shite dates. And, like, they also then wonder why he's not been able to get over her. Like, I'm sorry, if my pals hooked me up with a fruitarian who then told me that eating carrots is murder, you'd need to walk away, man.
Yeah, this is bizarre because the guy who's in Gladiator, I forgot his name in this. Like, him and his girlfriend, who's the one in the wheelchairs, kind of setting him up. They must, as you say, they must know these people.
Yeah.
Like, why would you set him up with her knowing she's a fruitarian? That's nothing against fruitarians. Like, if that's what you want to do it. But
why you're in?
They basically slag people who aren't meat eaters in this. It's a weird thing to die on.
Yeah, yeah. Like, Julia Roberts gets a slagging for being a veggie and all that. Yeah. And it's like, all right, relax. This is the thing, though, and it's in a lot of rom-coms where there's, like, when they can't get over the one that got away, they, like, hook them up with all these absolute shanners. And it's like, your pals don't love you if they are hooking you up with these absolute riots, yeah. Do you know what I mean?
And it's weird to know that in these movies that they all have to be with somebody.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Like, if you're not in a couple, you're not happy.
Yeah. It's just pretty weird how, but they're all so desperate.
Yeah.
Like, to find love, and is that the only way you can be happy?
It's the point of rom-coms, isn't it? Like, but then they all have that, like, moment where it's like, oh, you complete me. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, don't shit on the rom-coms from up high. Yes, we can be happy without love, but shut up, right? In the movie forms, we need the big, massive speech. We need the line. We need the, you had me at hello.
Oh, no, I get that, but
I'm glad it was you.
I'd like to see one.
You want the rest of your life to start with someone else?
I'd like to see.
Oh, Joe! Sorry.
I would like to see one where it's people have actually got their shit together.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, straight off the bat, none of this. Oh, I'm a divorced person. I'm this, I'm that. And is it two normal guys? Like, just, right, let's do it.
I just working away.
Yeah. Like, I like you, you like me. Sound. Let's go for there. What's wrong with that?
Well, it's not exactly, like, dramatic enough for a film, is there?
I mean, we've got people who can't have kids and can't walk in this. Is that no drama enough?
There's no, I like you just as you are. Do you know what I mean? So while Hugh Grant has been on his, like, really depressing walk for the past year through the same bit, there's things splashed all over the tabloids that say that Anna's old saucy photos have been leaked and she then arrives at Hugh Grant's door just like, hiya, I need somewhere to hide out. So basically she's came to Hugh Grant's gaff to hide out from the paps because when she was starting out her career, she took some saucy photos and now they've been leaked. So this then leads to a lovely wee montage, a lovely toasty wee montage of when they're practicing our lines, when they're talking about paintings, they're having a laugh about violin playing goats because they're just pure quirky, so they are. Talking about nudity clauses. I thought that bit was really funny when she's like talking about like Mel Gibson does his own ass work and all this, like, cracked me up. And then he is a gentleman and gives her his room, like, to sleep in, and then he does that, like, classic, like, tossing and turning of the couch of, like, should I go up there? No, maybe not. Da-da-da. And then Big Spike comes out, and Big Spike's like, are you going to slip her one, or will I? Like, it's just the shittest of part. It's so good.
Oh, will I?
Like, he's never smoked her before.
It's just the boldness. They went, well, if you're not gonna, you can I? And he's like, fuck off.
But he's like standing there in full scud, just like, right, my man, what's happening here?
You just look at him, he looks like a fucking mess. You would fucking shit herself.
So Spike goes back up the road, and then he goes up the stair.
If I can't do it, I'm going up the road.
Back to Wales, I go.
I can just imagine him breaking out of Hugh Grant's house. Can I give you one? Oh, fucking hell.
So he goes back up the stair, and Hugh Grant hears a noise, and he's like, fuck off, Spike. And then it turns out, the moment has arrived. Julia Roberts is at the bottom of the stairs, and we have the tender rom-com moment of the slow, the shirt being moved down the small of her back looking like the softest thing you've ever seen in your life, that like crease down the spine.
Yeah,
then
yeah.
He kisses down her neck on the shoulders that have not one blemish on them. And then there's a lot of like, this is the thing, and it's a necessity in rom-coms, is that like stare into each other's eyes as we slowly move into nip. Why are you giving me that much direct eye contact, good sir? Like, give me a nip and move on, do you know what I mean? What?
I'm just still laughing at Spike. Oh, honestly, he's by far the best part of this. I don't care what anyone says.
He's your favourite. So they obviously do the deed as the orchestra swells behind them, right? Yeah. And they wake up in the morning and she does the whole like, oh, Rita Hayworth said they would go to bed with Glinda and wake up with me. And they were always disappointed. And then Hugh Grant says that you're more lovely this morning than you've ever been. And you have never said anything that nice to me ever in your life.
Oh, you didn't shout to me in the morning?
That's because you stress me out in the morning. I'm trying to get ready to go to my work and you're just like,
half the time I'm not even doing it. Half the time the catch up doing stuff is my fault, apparently.
No, that was one time. That was one
time. Every night.
That was one time where one of the cats jumped on me and I thought it was, I was like sleeping and I thought it was Ross and I was like, fuck sake, Ross, leave me alone.
Why the fuck would I jump on you?
Are you alright?
Fucking break your back if I done that.
No, that is true. I do get into trouble for things the cats do. I'm sorry. Mornings are stressful, okay, leave me alone. So she hears the doorbell ring, runs down. Oh no, the paps have figured out where she is and they swarm the gaff. Everybody's freaking out. She's pure raging. Hugh Grant's trying to be like, my guy, let's get some perspective here. Like, my pal slipped and fell down the stairs and is paralysed. Surely I thought, like, he's crowbarring his paralysed pal in. And then he's like, oh, this isn't really that deep. And she's like, no, this is something that they are going to like have on record forever. This is something I'll regret forever. Oh, kick to the balls.
Oh, she can be a horrible bastard
in
this.
She's so savage. Like, this is the thing of like, I understand it's Julia Roberts and I understand she's supposed to be like, but it, like in the bits that she's charming, she's very charming.
Yeah.
But in the bits where she's cruel, bitch. Yeah. Even I felt that one, man. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, see, for a woman that's in this, who's got, like, the world at her feet, like, massive celebrity, making all sorts of money, like, the self-pity is unreal.
Mate, 100%. Cue another sad walk, the second sad walking montage of the film, to this time it's Ain't No Sunshine, as he walks through Notting Hill again through the seasons. So another year has gone by, and yet all this time again, still not arsed, still can't get over her, still doesn't know what to do. So then his sister and Big Spike, who again, this is the first time you see them in a room together, like they both run into the bookshop.
Yeah.
Now, I understand, off camera, a lot of things can go down. This is the first time us as a viewer are even seeing that they speak to each other, do you know what I mean?
The so first time you've seen Spike deal with any of his friends?
Yeah, totally. So they run in. They find out that Anna is back in London. They've got her agent's phone number and they're like, she's on Hampstead Heath. Go, 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 go. So he goes down and she's pure like, oh my God, you're here. And she's like, oh, can you wait for me? And then they do that thing. They do the miscommunication thing that just always works, man. That's like the one trope that just gets me every time. It's also really annoying, but works when it works. But I'll get onto that in about 5 minutes, right? Where he gets handed headphones, sits down, hears them talking about the scene, and then her co-star goes, oh, who's the guy? And she's like, oh, he's nobody. I don't know why he's here. Da, da, da. So then Hugh Grant's like, fuck, no, I look like an idiot. I'm away. And then you're pure like, what the fuck, Julia Roberts? Before we get into the end of the film, the miscommunication trope is in most rom-coms, like, and always is like a, they were almost at the same place at the same time. She misses like a letter by like a minute, like they'll miss the train or something like that. Or you've got things like Normal People, where the whole fucking thing is about the fact that these people can't have an adult conversation.
Aye, that's it. It'd be fixed with just sitting down, maybe having a shit night arguing or just talking about it, but you would get it resolved.
It's one and done, do you know what I mean? And, like, I think that's why the miscommunication trope is one of those, like, oh, ones, do you know what I mean? Because everybody's done it. Like, everybody's had a moment where it's like, oh, we could have fixed that if we just said, do you know what I mean?
It's got to be one of the most common reasons people fight, split up, divorce, whatever.
Absolutely, because nobody's just going to sit down and have a conversation. Like, that's the thing. Normal, I think that's why normal people absolutely knocks you in the gut, because all they had to do at any point was just sit down and be like, so are we going out? So do I live here? So what's happening? Like, do you know what I mean? But they don't, they're too like awkward. But then I suppose when you're in your 20s, you're a bit of a dick and you're like, yeah, no, it's fine, we'll do whatever you want. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it's obviously with that trope, as we've said, that like, people have experienced this. But it's also like if like, they don't have the conversation. But I think a lot of times is you probably don't want to.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
like,
you might not, one of them might not be into it, mm-hmm. and you just don't want to hear it.
Yeah.
So I can kind of understand why it happens, but it is a thing that's very overused.
Yeah, no, it is overused. But I mean, it's a romance classic for a reason. Do you know what I mean? Like,
aye.
And like, if you go through all of the romance tropes, like, yes, they are in these movies over-exaggerated, and yes, they are over the top, but you can go through like the list of tropes and be like, something like that happened to me one time, but on a like much lower scale than what you would see in the films, you know? Sorry, just wanted to crowbar normal people in there, you know?
Like... I felt this.
So then this is the bit, the moment, the iconic scene where she arrives at the bookshop and she's like, oh, I was going to go back to LA, but I just wanted to see if you wanted to fire in. And he's like, no, I don't think I would survive. Like, you're just too famous. There's too many photos of you everywhere. If we split up, I'll never get over it. And during the whole conversation, there's all these mad interruptions. You know what I mean? There's like the dickhead customer, and Hugh Grant's like, don't you dare fucking leave. And then like the wee guy, I can't remember his name, but he's in Gimme, Gimme, Gimme.
Oh, yes.
I cannot remember his name for the life of me.
Uh-huh.
I think he's also in, like, Four Weddings as well. And he, like, comes in, he's like, your mum's on the phone. It's like, fuck off, mum. So he's like, there's all this. It's like a pure build-up. And he's like, listen, you're just too famous. I wouldn't be able to go over it. And she says the bit where it's, but please remember, I'm just a girl standing in front of a boy asking him to love her. Ah, here we go. Roll the fucking credits. I'm in. And I'm not being funny. See, if the movie had just ended there and we didn't get the happy ending, like, well, the cemented happy ending.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd have been quite happy with that, because that's that beautiful, like, oh, but did he? Oh, that was great. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, uh-huh. I think a lot of modern romance movies, and I say romance in italics because a lot of them like to end on like a depressing note of like the relationship that didn't quite work out, that kind of thing. But it's the same kind of thing of like when you watch Harry Met Sally and they get together at New Year, but you don't really see if they last.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And all that kind of stuff. Whereas obviously after this moment, after this, like this is the iconic bit. This is the one that's on all the lists of like most romantic moments in movies. After this, you do then get the montage of, like, them getting married, him going to premieres and all this kind of thing. And as much as I'm like, that's lovely and I'm so glad this has all been tied up in a nice wee bow and that he's embracing her fame and they're enjoying sitting on the bench reading books to each other, which is in my fucking A because I've got thoughts and opinions about that one bit. Like, it's neatly wrapped up and done, but I don't think we needed it. It does feel very tacked on of like where they've showed it to a test audience or something like that and they've been like, no, we need to see what happens. Do you know what I mean?
No, I've got you. The bit about this scene I like is it's probably the most sensible he is in the whole movie.
Yeah.
Is that all his doubts in that, he's actually finally like extend them to her?
Yep.
Is it rather than just being like dragged along for all this, which he has been, mm-hmm. and he's like, I don't know if I can, like, I don't know if I can do this.
He's setting the boundaries. Yeah. He's doing the things.
Like, he has to be like, no, I'm actually looking out for myself here, which it always, in all of these types of movies, it's always about just, as you said, like, the relationship itself.
Yeah. I think, yeah, and I think this is the thing, is like, obviously, when you're younger watching these movies, see when you're in your teenage years to early 20s, it's like the whirlwind of the romance that's the appeal, if you know what I mean. It's all this, like, everything's super dramatic and we've had our wee meet cute and now we've done this and now we're having dramatic arguments and now we're back together and blah, 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 blah. And it's like the start of this movie is like the whirlwind of them trying to see if they can work and going to do normal things as well as dipping into her famous thing and all this. It's all very that. But then this is the bit where, when relationships get more serious, do you know what I mean? Of like, okay, we need to start having these serious conversations. We need to start putting in place our boundaries, what we want to do, what the future holds, blah, fucking blah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's kind of when, like, the fairy tale's over.
Yes.
You actually have to...
Not fairy tale, you're fucking buzzing to be with me,
oh,
right?
Aye. But it's good with, like, seeing you see other, like, rom-coms, even, like, The Graduate. Like,
yes.
Dustin Hoffman, is at like the ending of that's famous. Like, he runs to the chapel or like church, whatever. He runs away with him, then they get in the bus. They're all
smiling.
They're
just sitting there.
Yeah, they're all smiling. Then it starts getting into a like shit. Like, we need to figure things out here.
Totally, totally.
But I like ones that get where it's end is, it's not just a stupid, whimsical, romantic thing, but it's more like, realistic, really. Like,
yeah.
Like, not only have they done that, but they're going to need to fix a lot of things before they can kind of be happy together.
Totally, totally. One of my favourite, more modern ones, and again, you're going to judge me for saying favourite because Sebastian Stan's in it, but it's called Monday, and basically it's this lawyer goes to Greece and he's a DJ and they have this, like, romantic... Like, basically, the movie is set over different Fridays of their relationship, and it was supposed to just be, like, a summer fling, then she ends up staying, and the movie's about how they try to work together, but then, obviously, you get this, like, super dramatic thing that happens. I don't want to spoil it in case anybody watches it. And then at the end of the movie, it's finally Monday. And, like, the point of the movie is that, like, you can have all these wild and fun Fridays with people, but what do you do when it gets to Monday? Like,
are you
going to sit and be hungover and make the coffee and the breakfast and be a couple? Or are you going to bounce? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, because it can't be like that all the time.
Absolutely not. And I think that's why that's one of my... favorite modern ones is like, because obviously you have the whirlwind, you have the like, oh, he's so spontaneous and takes her on a trip to an island and buys her a designer dress, but then she's also needing to try and work while he's doing his like DJ stuff in the side, and they're trying to balance all this stuff, and it's not realistic, obviously, because if Sebastian Stan was a DJ in Greece and showed me any interest, I would not fucking be here. Do you know what I mean? Love you, Ross. But like, it's more realistic in the way of like, things are great, it's all romance, we don't really know that much about each other, we just pure fancy each other, to then it being Monday and it's like, okay, what do we do now? Do you know what I mean?
Like, you just based on it to learn to live with each other as well. Like, like, you kind of get caught up in all that and expect everything to be perfect.
I think that's the thing, though, is like, when you mature and your relationship matures, it's like, it's the comfort you enjoy. Like, see the, like, not the dull bits, because obviously no one likes being bored, but I just mean, like, you can just sit and you can just chill and there's nothing that exciting going on. Nobody's going out of their way to make these, like, lavish plans and all this, but it's just like, do you want to go to the cinema? Cool. Do you want to stay in? Cool. Do you know what I mean? It's
the daft things, like, sitting on a couch, like, what we're watching.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, what's on Netflix? Just daft things
100%,
like that.
Like, just being comfortable
with
somebody. And, like, I think that's the thing of, like, obviously, rom-coms, when you're younger, you're like, oh, my God, I want that fiery thing. But really, when you're older and you're settled and you're content and... it's not passionate arguments all the time. It's not huge, lavish plans. It's just like, we've got a day off together, will we go for a walk? Like, yeah. Do you know what I mean? It's all stuff like that. Look at us, we're all getting us sitting.
Yeah, but it's even place. Not having a... It's like, say you, oh, I want to do this, and I'm like, I can't be bothered. That it doesn't tell, oh no, the relationship's falling apart.
Yeah, it's no, just it's like, I've got other...
Yeah,
no, totally. Like, if I say to you, oh, do you want to do this? And you're like, no, I'm like, cool, I'll go with my pals. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's, yeah, none of this, like, oh my God, he didn't do this, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, but like, in these movies, if that was to happen, that'd be the next big fucking drama.
Yeah, yeah, and yeah.
Like, no, people just, like, there are times when you're not as compatible, but you're not, like, on the same wavelength, like, maybe. And, like, stuff like that happens, but in these movies, they make out as if, no, everything's just perfection. Like, we're going to be so perfect. None of the carry-on, is it? You've already fought like cats and dogs before you've even started going out. Like,
yeah.
What makes you think this changes now?
100%. Yeah, I think I read a thing and it's like, obviously after, so when you start going out with someone, it takes 3 years for the like dopamine rush in your head to go away.
Aye.
So that's why a lot of relationships don't really last after 3 years, because that like initial high, that initial like, I want to be with you every single fucking day, like, I want to like breathe what you breathe, like that whole thing, like an Enrique Iglesias song, do you know what I mean? That's when that all starts to die out, and it's after that you do start to get more comfortable, and that's when you like not choose to be with a person, but that's when like there's not the chemical telling you like I need to be with this person all the time. It's
I've
like I choose to be with you. Uh-huh. I choose and I'm gonna work to be with you and all that kind of stuff. Look at us, Ross, eh? Hitting the people with the relationship advice, eh?
Fucking get it done.
Just start going to each other and shut the fuck up. So anyway, we'll dive into Let's Go. Do you have a Let's Go moment?
I mean, it's going to be kind of the orange juice bit, isn't it? That's when this all kicks off.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's not the scene that I'm like, that I'm, there's not really a Let's Go like getting pumped up, signed up in this, but like as for the story and moving it, it's got to be the orange juice scene.
Yeah, of course, because if he doesn't bump into her, it's not a thing.
But I've took it this week as just something that's like, right, this literally kicks off the movie.
Yeah. I have not a movie-related Let's Go, but it just brings me sheer joy, is when Ronan Keating starts singing.
Oh, fuck off.
And it's just turning around and seeing your face of fucking rage.
Get it up on, man.
But it's like, it's just... Whenever, like, obviously, Ronan Keating's song is the song of this song, is the song of the song.
The song of the song.
The song of the Clyde. No.
Woo!
The song of the movie, which I always thought it was that "If Tomorrow Never Comes," but apparently that's not. It's "You Say It Best and You Say Nothing At All."
Fair enough.
What film was "If Tomorrow Never Comes"? No, apparently "If Tomorrow Never Comes" wasn't in a film. It's just a really sad song. Great. But nice, you know stunning. How much I loved her. This is going to spark my old Ronan Keating
you
love.
You can fuck off.
Do you know who loves Ronan Keating? Ainsley.
She can fuck off, I know.
That's savage. But yeah, that's like my not movie-related, but kind of movie-related Let's Go moment, is as soon as I hear Ronan Keating and I can just feel you go... Like, do you have a favourite scene?
I mean, bike coming down, can I slip a one?
Yeah.
Like, that's just fucking class.
Yeah. Mine's is when they're practicing her lines on the roof and like keeps fucking it up, but like from the script it sounds heavy shite, and he's like, oh, maybe do something else, but you know, this is fine. Like,
one thing we forgot to mention actually, see when she's back in London and the guy for Gladiator, sorry, I forgot his name again.
Aye, your man.
At the restaurant, shows him the paper. Award-winning actress.
Uh-huh.
She's won an Oscar.
Aye, for the pish films that she's in.
The little bit you see where it's like, it's either the one where they're at the art gallery.
And do you know, spoiler alert for your information, the actor in that film is Matthew Modine? Papa! From Stranger Things.
It's either that or the one in space.
And they in both, space!
They both look shite, so I don't know what the fuck. Must have been a tough year, like 99 for the Oscars.
100%.
98, whatever it is.
100%. Right, because this submarine movie doesn't really sound like it's going to be much better, does it?
I don't imagine many submarine movies like doing well.
Maybe it was The Hunt for Red October. Two, part two. All right, I'll dive into some useless information.
Aye, go for it.
There isn't really a lot of useless information out there because basically they made this movie with the cast in mind. So this is all just kind of wee tidbits. So the house that Will lives in with the blue door once belonged to screenwriter Richard Curtis. And Adele used to live in the flat above the bookshop. Your woman?
Big Notting Hill, eh?
Big saucy Adele.
Living it up.
During the dinner party, Anna Scott is asked how much she made on her last film, where she replies, $15 million. This is actually how much she was paid in her role in Notting Hill. $15 million, man.
That's obscene, isn't it?
Isn't it?
Jesus Christ, man.
Julia Roberts was the one and only choice for the female lead, even though Nicole Kidman and Sigourney Weaver allegedly auditioned for it. When she received the script, she said it was the best romantic comedy she'd ever read and cancelled projects to film it, but it didn't really say what projects she cancelled. So if we ever do another Julia Roberts movie and there's something to do with scheduling conflicts, we know it's because of Notting Hill.
Yeah, yeah, no, fair enough.
Hugh Grant was also the first and only male choice, as he had worked with Richard Curtis before, and the director said that no one does Curtis quite like Hugh Grant.
So if you want like a bumbling, like middle-class British idiot, Hugh Grant does it well.
100%. He's your man.
Aye, your man.
Your man. Omid Djalili plays the coffee shop cashier. He was filming The Mummy at the same studio.
Nice.
So on a visit into the set, just kind of jumped in for a small cameo. So the orange juice that he sells Hugh Grant is the orange juice that goes all over Julia Roberts. So really, if there was no Omid Djalili, there would be no film.
Aye, cool. That's what we'll... He's the reason this movie exists. Good on him.
Big Omid Djalili hits it again. This one I thought was so daft, right? This is the last one. The park bench that was used for filming, where they have their romantic first kiss.
Yeah.
And then he reads our books on it, which I'll get to in A. Is now located in East Perth in Western Australia. It was bought at an auction as a romantic gift. I'm going to do that whole bit again. The park bench, which was used for filming, is now located in East Perth in Western Australia. It was bought at auction as a romantic gift for a relationship that has since failed. It was then donated to the city and is now placed in a closed-off garden, much like the one in the film. So this bench has had like a pure full circle moment.
Fair enough, aye.
Who'd have thunk it?
Good for the bench, I suppose.
Living its best life in a garden in Australia. Right, so we'll dive in. Do you want to go?
Aye, right. I actually don't have a lot. How the fuck does he afford a flat in Notting Hill? In London in general?
I had that too. Like, I was thinking maybe in the 90s, Notting Hill wasn't this, like, bougie place. Like, and it's just kind of been gentrified since. But I do agree with you. Like, in a lot of these ones, it's like, oh, I sell fucking buttons and I live in Hampstead Heath. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, so I've looked it up. At the house prices at the time in Notting Hill was at just about £630,000.
Holy shit.
So maybe his bookshop is just thriving.
Aye.
But I don't think he can afford that.
Absolutely not.
Like, the one thing about this movie is it helped Notting Hill. So the house prices, like, dramatically risen. I think everybody just kind of wanted to, like, move there.
Yeah.
Or live
it,
there.
It does look gorgeous. Do you know, it's the one bit of London I've, like, not been to.
Yeah. But it's went from 630,000 to just under 3 million. Now your average house price.
Shut the fuck, like, up.
Yeah, it's kind of turned into the, like, well, obviously, like, there seems to be parts of London that, like, they all have the moment.
Yeah.
But for its time, is it, that was, like, the place to be.
Yeah. It kind of seems like, and I don't know if I'm way out of the times, obviously we are not from London, but, like, everyone was talking about, like, Shoreditch a while ago. Like, there was those, like, warehouse container. Remember when we went down and there was, like, container boutiques and all this kind of stuff? There's gentrification, isn't it?
Yeah. And
that's fucking nuts.
That is. I know he said, of this movie.
Yeah. I mean, it does look gorgeous, but they do make it look more of like a working man's area, whereas from what I know about Notting Hill now, I've never been, but it's apparently bougie as shit. It's like up there with like main, like Chelsea and all that kind of places, you know?
There's not many places in London unless you probably go like right at the East End, where it's like, this is a working man's area.
Yeah.
Like, fair enough. Maybe at the time, but I highly doubt it.
Aye, 100%.
Right, I'll go to my next one. Mm-hmm. Is how does Spike become his lodger?
Yeah, where did they meet? How has this become a thing? Yeah.
Like that they've got to have been pals, but how is he affording to pay that? Like, the rent must be ridiculous.
100%. Yeah, because he says him and his wife bought the flat before she left them, but I don't care, like, a mortgage on a £600,000 house, like, obviously this is all relative, do you know what I mean? Like, that's obviously still a lot of money in the 90s. It's not as if, like, it's a bargain, do you know what I mean?
Oh, no. Oh, like, there's no way that would...
Like, that's still going to have been a fortune in the 90s, so I don't understand. Yeah, and do you know what I mean? I was going to be like, oh, maybe they met at art school, but there's, like, no... There's not really a lot about their past or anything, and then also you're running a travel bookshop, like...
Yeah, like, he's the owner of the travel bookshop, which, being such a niche thing, is that, like, as I've said before, is that going to be the big sale thing that it should be?
Yeah. It's like, and you've got Mail, where she runs like the corner bookshop, and she's like fighting against Tom. Oh my God, what the fuck's his name?
Who?
Forrest Gump.
Tom Hanks.
For fuck's
sake. What the fuck's that?
Oh my God. Yeah, she's fighting against Tom Hanks's like huge corporate, like Barnes and Noble kind of vibe. Like, it's very, like, but she also manages to live in a pure class gaff right in the middle of New York. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Aye, of course they do, because she owns a bookshop.
Yeah, right? It's all these fucking movies that's like, when I grow up, I want to run a bookshop and I want to run a coffee shop or something like that. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. You're like, oh, it's going to be class. Like,
no, it's just hard work, not a lot of pay.
Yeah, 100%.
When he even says himself he can't afford to, like, buy for stuff in the shop.
Yeah.
When he's doing the orderings, I'll only get half, can't afford the rest.
Uh-huh.
Like, fuck off.
This is the thing right now. My dad is one of those guys, right, who buys or used to buy, like, if my mum and dad were going on holiday, my dad would then buy a book about the place they were going and then fucking create itineraries from said book. Do you know what I mean? So I don't know. Maybe it is like a generational thing, because, I mean, to be fair, you and me, we're a nightmare to go on holiday because we don't really plan anything. Nah, we just
go with it.
Yeah, 100%. Like, we just, like, show up and we're like, we'll find stuff to do. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, we'll do, like, a bit of research, but most of that, we're always very much of, like, we leave the front door and we're like, what direction will we walk
just wing it, aye.
Do you know what I mean? Whereas, like, my dad used to be a right planner, do you know what I mean?
Oh, God, couldn't be bothered with that.
No, absolutely not. So, I mean, I get it. In the 90s, obviously, there have been things like that, but again, libraries, mate, why are you spending, like, £15 on a book about a country you're never going to go to again?
Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
Libraries, people, it all comes back to Pagemaster.
Aye.
So, I don't know if mine counts as an A, but it's a fucking gripe, right? I will never... So, the end of this film, right? They are lounging on the bench. She's draped across his lap as he is reading her a book, right? When did anyone decide that this was a romantic thing to do? Like, you see, like, celebrities doing it now, like, or not even now, like, all the time. There's that, like, pure infamous photo of Bradley Cooper and Suki Waterhouse when she was, like, 20 and he was, like, in his late 30s and he's reading her Lolita. Like, the irony is not fucking lost, do you know what I mean? And there's, like, so many photos of, like, celebrities and, like, people in general. Like, you see it up, like, the park all the time when it's during the summer and it'll be like the students and one of them's like draped over as the other one's reading them a book. See, if you were like, to me, oh, mum will go up the park and I'll read you a book, I'd be like, no thank you, I can read myself.
Just the stupid idea that, oh, this, I've seen this, so it's romantic. No, it? It's bullshit. Oh,
you take your book and I'll take mine. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, like, a lot of stuff you see in movies and that is that, like, oh, that's dead romantic, then you try to say, no, this is so uncomfortable.
Aye, gives me a pure ick. Oh, fuck, like, absolutely gives me an ick. Like, again, sorry if you have ever read a book to your spouse and it's worked out, but no, see if you were like, lay across my lap and let me read you this. Plus, you read really fucking slow as well. So I'd be like,
you can't even read.
Fuck up. Just because I like an audiobook, right? Leave me be. Have you got any other days?
No, I've went through mine.
No, that's fine. Mine was just more of a ugh. Have you got a worse guy whose hairline's receding?
Big Baldwin.
Yeah, I've got Baldwin too.
Yeah.
Like, what a prick. Like, uh-huh. In real life and in this film. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Who knew it would work out like that?
But also, you know, thanks for, like, the free wad of cash, you know?
I get it off him.
Have you got anybody who's in a different movie?
No, Spike. It's got to be, surely.
In a good way or a bad way?
Oh, in a good way.
Oh, right, okay. Like, right.
It's fucking, he's perfect in this movie, but he's not in the same, he's not in the same realm as half of these people.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I want Notting Hill 2, the Spike
version. Yeah, just him,
I didn't really have anybody because I thought everyone was, like, really well cast in their parts. Do you know what I mean?
No, I know, I'll give you that, aye.
Like, obviously, Reese Evans is, like, perfectly cast as Spike, but yeah. I get what you mean of, like, all his pals are, like, super buttoned up and organised, and then Big Spike's cutting about his arse hanging out half the time. See that bit where he goes out into the photographers and he's, like flexing so with his arse hanging out, like, and it's, like, nice firm buttocks. Like, so fucking stupid. So stupid. Do you have an I'm out?
Nah.
Nah, me neither. Movie's kind of done, like, by the time you're like, oh, I'm tired, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it hits the beats, then it finishes.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, thank you guys for listening this week. We hope you have a lovely Valentine's Day, however you celebrate. Also, happy birthday, Ainsley! We'll see y'all again next week. Bye!
Bye!
The smile on your face lets me know that you need me.